following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Truth, the half-truth, and nothing of the truth. Veritas News now with Sal Manella.
Good evening, this is Sal Manila with the Veritas News. First Lady Melania Trump celebrated her 47th birthday today, making a rare appearance in D.C. to attend the birthday party given in her honor. Melania was mostly all smiles until asked her opinion of her husband's economic declaration of war against Canada. The First Lady's comment was either a chance to vent personal marital woes or, because of language deficiencies, a misunderstanding of the topic. She said that for over a decade now, her husband has not been able to provide any wood at all, and certainly not hardwood. However, the circumstances were made more tolerable by what she called Canada's abundant insertion of at least soft wood, especially while fantasizing about the leader of our neighbor to the north, Justin Trudeau. Melania's women friends at the party concurred and said the First Lady's comments were right on the button and that Melania had certainly put her finger on it. One of her friends requesting anonymity in alluding to the last time the Trumps engaged in marital relations quipped that in that regard, the First Lady should change her name from Melania to Millennia. Mrs. Trump's comments expressing regrets about her husband's taxation sanctions against Canada's softwood exports to the United States seems to answer economists' questions about items on Trump's economic disclosure forms showing specific itemizations for Canada's adult wood walnut sex toy company sold on Etsy. Ivanka Trump in Europe was not available to comment on her father and stepmother's marital arrangements. Additionally, her fondness for Justin Trudeau is no secret. Eric Trump commented that wood is not a commodity about which the Trumps know much. He said with Canada out of the lumber picture, however, it might be easier to keep Americans' lumber companies afloat, saying, quote, I think the only American wood that wouldn't float might be Natalie Wood, end quote. Psychologists worldwide have often noted Donald Trump's tendency to project. One psychiatrist in particular notes Trump's propensity in what she calls symbolic projection. For example, she says Trump's obsession with the wall is clearly a symbolic projection of his inability to truly connect with people on a personal, intimate level. She notes that Trump's insistence in acquiring a golden this and a golden that, and demanding he ride with the Queen in an open golden carriage through the streets of London, is a clear symbolic projection that he is, in fact, guilty. This has been Sal Manila with the Veritas News. Now here's Tom Savino with Savino Veritas.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards, with a V for victory. Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The gripes of wrath.
Everything but the truth. to Vino Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Good evening, everyone. Tom Savino here with Savino Veritas from Burbank, California, live. Coming to you live from Burbank, California, land of make-believe and fantasy. The fine wine of select gripes here on Savino Veritas. Veritas is satire spelled backwards with a V for victory. So let's get victorious with Savino Veritas. Today you're going to hear Alex Jones. You're going to hear Keith Olbermann and Stephen Colbert, among others. So enjoy!
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The gripes of wrath.
Trump's authoritarian vision, part 3 of the LA Times op-ed, Why Does Trump Lie? Standing before the cheering throngs at the Republican National Convention last summer, Donald Trump bemoaned how special interest had rigged the country's politics and its economy, leaving Americans victimized by unfair trade deals. He swooped into politics, he declared, to subvert the powerful and rescue those who cannot defend themselves. Nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it. To Trump's faithful, those words were a rallying cry, but his critics heard something far more menacing in them. A dangerously authoritarian vision of the presidency, one that would crop up time and again as he talked about overruling generals, disregarding international law, ordering soldiers to commit war crimes, jailing his opponent. Trump has no experience in politics. He's never previously run for office or held a government position. So perhaps he was unaware that one of the hallmarks of American system of government is that the president's power to fix things unilaterally is constrained by an array of strong institutions, including the courts, the media, the permanent federal bureaucracy, and Congress. Combined, they provide an essential defense against an imperial presidency. Yet in his first weeks at the White House, President Trump has already sought to undermine many of those institutions, those that have displayed the temerity to throw some hurdle in the way of a Trump objective, have quickly felt the heat. Consider Trump's feud with the courts. He has repeatedly questioned the impartiality of the motives of judges. For example, he attacked the jurist who ruled against his order, excluding travelers from 7 majority Muslim nations, calling one a, quote, so-called judge, end quote, and later tweeted, just cannot believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and court system. People pouring in. Bad. That was on February the 5th, 2017, tweet from Donald J. Trump. It's nothing new for presidents to disagree with court decisions, but Trump's direct personal attacks on judges' integrity and on the legitimacy of the judicial system itself, and his irresponsible suggestion that the judiciary should be blamed for future terrorist attacks go farther. They aim to undermine public faith in the third branch of government. The courts are the last line of defense for the Constitution and the rule of law. That's what makes them such a powerful buffer against an authoritarian leader. The President of the United States should understand that and respect it. Other institutions under attack include 1. The electoral process. Faced with certified election results showing that Hillary Clinton outpolled him by nearly 3 million votes, Trump repeated the unsubstantiated and likely crackpot assertion that Clinton supporters had duped local polling places with millions of fraudulent votes. In a democracy, the right to vote is the one check that the people themselves hold against their leaders. Sowing distrust in elections is the kind of thing leaders do when they don't want their power checked. 2. The intelligence community. After reports emerged that the Central Intelligence Agency believed Russia had tried to help Trump win, the president-elect's transition team responded, quote, "These are the same people that said Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction," end quote. It was a snarky, dismissive, undermining response, and the administration has continued to belittle the intelligence community and question its motive since then, while also leaking stories about possible paring and restructuring its ranks. It is bizarre to watch Trump continue to tussle publicly with this particular part of the government, whose leaders he himself has appointed, as if he were still an outsider candidate raging against the machine. It's unnerving, too, given the intelligence service's crucial role in protecting the country against hidden risks, assisting the United States military, and helping inform Trump's decisions. 3. The media. Trump has blistered the mainstream media for reporting that has cast him in a poor light, saying outlets concocted narratives based on non-existent anonymous sources. In February, he said that the, quote, fake news, end quote, media will, quote, never represent the people, end quote, adding ominously, and we're going to do something about it, end quote. His goal seems to be to defang the media watchdog by making the public doubt any coverage that accuses Trump of blundering or abusing his power. 4. Federal agencies. In addition to calling for agency budgets to be chopped by up to 30%, Trump appointed a string of cabinet secretaries who are hostile to much of their agency's missions and the laws they're responsible for enforcing. He has also proposed deep cuts in federal research programs, particularly in those related to climate change. It's easier to argue that climate change isn't real when you're no longer collecting the data that documents it. In a way, Trump represents a culmination of trends that have been years in the making. Conservative talk radio hosts have long blasted federal judges as activists and regulators as meddlers in the economy, while advancing the myth of rampant election fraud. And gridlock in Washington has led previous presidents to try new ways to circumvent the checks on their power. Witness George W. Bush's use of signing statements to invalidate parts of bills Congress passed. And President Obama's aggressive use of executive orders when lawmakers balked at his proposals. What's uniquely threatening about Trump's approach, though, is how many fronts he's opened in this struggle for power and the vehemence with which he seeks to undermine the institutions that don't go along. It's one thing to complain about a judicial decision or to argue for less regulation, but to the extent that Trump weakens public trust in essential institutions like the courts and the media, he undermines faith in democracy and in the system and processes that make it work. Trump betrays no sense for the president's place among the myriad of institutions in the continuum of governance. He seems willing to violate long-established political norms without a second thought, and he cavalierly rejects the civility and deference that allow the system to run smoothly. He sees himself as not merely a force for change, but as a wrecking ball. Will Congress act as a check on Trump's worst impulses as he moves forward? One test of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee's investigation into Russia's meddling in the presidential election. Lawmakers need to muster the courage to follow the trail wherever it leads. Can the court stand up to Trump? Already several federal judges have issued rulings against the president's travel ban, and although Trump has railed against the decisions, he has obeyed them. None of these institutions are eager to cede authority to the White House, and they won't do so without a fight. It would be unrealistic to suggest that America's most basic democratic institutions are in imminent jeopardy. But we should not view them as invulnerable either. Remember that Trump's verbal assaults are directed at the public and are designed to chip away at public's confidence in these institutions and deprive them of their validity. When a dispute arises, whose actions are you going to consider legitimate? Whom are you going to trust? That's why the public has to be wary of Trump's attacks on the courts, the so-called deep state, and the swamp. We can't afford to be talked into losing our faith in the forces that protect us from an imperial presidency. This has been the third in a series.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The gripes of wrath.
That's who we come from, and we let all these hunchback scum rule us. I will never submit to you.
This is Tom Savino with Savino Veritas from Burbank, California. And in the next segment of this show, we're going to hear a great contrast between two extremes. One, the crazy Alex Jones. The other, the insightful but passionate Keith Olbermann. And balancing those would be the great satirist, my favorite satirist, Stephen Colbert, who has really hit the nail on the head, and I wish he would hit him in the head too. Alex Jones, he really does a great satire of Alex Jones with his Tuck Buckford. So we're going to hear that and enjoy.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards with a V for victory.
This whole week, I've been bringing you the latest updates from the trial of conspiracy radio host and furious hard-boiled egg Alex Jones. You guys know who he is? You know Alex Jones is? InfoWars? Very popular. Trump's a big fan. Donald Trump is a big fan. And Jones right now is in a legal battle with his ex-wife, who says he's too unstable to have custody of their children. And to prove it, she's been showing the court videos like this.
George Washington with diarrhea running out of his pants on top of that horse. Marching to kick ass. Marching not to give up. Taking action. That's who we come from. And we let all these hunchback scum rule us. I will never submit to you. And the human spirit is rising. You will not turn us into animals.
Got a lot happening.
You can never turn Alex into an animal because he's already a rabid badger. But Jones's lawyers are defending him. It's a very unique defense. They're saying that when he says stuff like that, they say that Jones is just playing a character. And evidently yesterday, Jones took the stand and backed that up. Reportedly, at real Alex Jones called out Stephen Colbert in testimony. That's me. And said, he was making fun of me the other day, but he doesn't take that home to his kids. That is true. I don't take that home. Whenever I talk about Alex Jones, my wife will not let me into the house until I've been deloused. I gotta burn my clothes outside before I enter the airlock. We'll just click that. Sorry. You ever seen Andromeda Strain? Like that. Yeah. They gotta make sure I'm sterile. And we also learned a bit about how the marriage might have gone wrong. Jones told the court that even though his ex-wife was a member of PETA, Jones likes to eat zebra steaks. And would you like that rare or medium rare? I'd like it extremely rare, endangered, in fact. Of course, one of the accusations against him is drug use, which he admitted to, saying he sometimes smokes marijuana nearly yearly to monitor its strength, which is how law enforcement does it. Yes. Everyone remembers that one Law and Order episode every year where the detectives burn down the dank bud, then sit on the cat couch with a bunch of snacks and binge watch Law and Order. It's pretty trippy. All cops. In fact, it's not just Law and Order. This is real. All cops do this.
All cops do it.
All policemen get stoned once a year, but first they look in the mirror and they say, am I a cop? I gotta tell me if I'm a cop. And again, I feel bad for Alex Jones here, because in the past, I'm a performer, and I've been judged for the things I've said while in character, specifically the character of Tuck Buckford, who's the host of the right-wing radio show, Brain Fight.
I gotta tell you, Brain Fighters, Ben Franklin had irritable bowel syndrome just exploding all over that kite in the middle of a rainstorm. But did that stop him? No, it did not. He kept going, okay? And just, it went everywhere, okay? And that's how he invented the moist towelette. Now, Brain Nation, I gotta tell you, old Tuck's a bit mellow today, because for your safety, I have been testing the strength of some of George Soros's patented mind control marijuana. I do it once a year, and then once an hour for a year, just like the brave men and women of the Coast Guard. You can really taste the butane. Now, I get a lot of calls saying, now, you've accused the Tooth Fairy of not being real, but what do we tell our kids? You tell your kids the truth, okay? Tooth Fairy is really the CIA coming to our children's rooms at night to collect their DNA off the little molars and the bicuspids to use the DNA to generate artificial cyber sperm that then they sell to the witches' covens who use turkey basters to inseminate each other to create an army of demon babies to fight our wars. I'm not making this stuff up. I'm imagining it. Okay? Now, you've been watching the news. You may have heard from my ex-wife, Deb, that I am a marijuana addict who should not be trusted with my own children. It is not true. I am just Logie from eating all this delicious giraffe meat. And yes, my wife is an animal lover. And yes, this is April the giraffe. But I am a man with teeth. Teeth that chew and a throat that swallows and a heart in my chest that beats 4 to 5 times a minute because of all the meat I've been chewing. You're dead, I'm alive. You're dead, I'm alive. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to check out some of the crack cocaine that the Department of Justice has been pushing on the Muppets on Sesame Street. Big Bird's in on it. Snuffleupagus isn't real. False flag operation. Let's see how good this crack is. Oh. Stronger than it was this morning. Kid, don't do this stuff, okay? Because if you try to take mine, you will draw back a bloody stump. You will fight my brain. My brain has cobra fangs. You'll be dead in 8 seconds. Hemotoxins. Today's show is brought to you by Blue Apron. Not the food. The lead-lined smock that keeps the National Park Service satellites from photographing your genitals while you sleep. So I never sleep. Give me that crack. I'm gonna put it on my ding-dong, just like Thomas Jefferson told us to in the Magna Carta. Come on. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good.
We got a great show for you tonight. Rosario Dawson is here. But when we return, I will offer a sneak preview of the new Aliens movie with a very special guest. Stick around.
We are at war with Russia. Or perhaps more correctly, we have lost a war with Russia without a battle. We are no longer a sovereign nation. We are no longer a democracy. We are no longer a free people. We are the victims of a bloodless coup. So far, a bloodless coup engineered by Russia with, at best, the traitorous indifference of the Republican Party and Donald John Trump, a man who, to borrow a phrase from another December long ago, will live in infamy. In 5 weeks' time, unless desperate measures are taken, we will hand over the government to a man who lost the popular vote by more than Woodrow Wilson or Jimmy Carter won it. A man whom the Russians wanted to run our country for them. A man whom the Russians got to run our country for them. A man for whom the Russians interfered with our elections, which, if we did it to another country, would be described as an act of war. And in this country, we have conceded defeat. Some experts, John Kasich's strategist, John Weaver for one, have compared this to Pearl Harbor. Even the hard right ex-Congressman Joe Walsh says Republican silence will be tantamount to treason. Some others, too, have proved courageous. Trump, self-destructive to the last, issued a childish statement mocking the CIA, but as Tim Dickinson of Rolling Stone noted, not denying anything. But the vast majority of Republicans have said nothing. And the vast majority of Democrats have said nothing. And the vast majority of the media has said nothing of substance. And the president has said nothing close to enough. The CIA and FBI and Homeland Security, the institutions whose interest in freedom we on the left most frequently distrust, they have said something. They said it first to congressional and Senate Republicans in September. Dire warnings, warnings that Mitch McConnell and other Republicans reportedly buried, warnings that the Russians, using computer hacking and perhaps other means, were not merely trying to discredit the election, but to achieve the specific outcome of electing their man Trump. And finally, at the very last hour, some of those who did those briefings and some of those who received those briefings leaked the details to the New York Times, the Washington Post, CBS News, Reuters, in a torrent of anguished honesty. They said something. They said something as the president-not-elect began to veer towards appointing as Secretary of State, as our diplomatic face to the world, the CEO of Exxon, who 4 years ago received the Order of Friendship from Vladimir Putin. They said something as the members of the Electoral College prepared to gather next Monday to finalize this coup. Some, perhaps unaware that almost half the states they represent permit them by law to vote for someone other than the candidate to whom they are pledged, and that only 38 of them need to do so to prevent this coup. They said something as one especially chilling detail in one of the reports sailed by that, quote, the Russians hacked the Republican National Committee's computer systems in addition to their attacks on Democratic organizations, but did not release whatever information they gleaned from the Republican networks. It is a short leap from that conclusion, and it is anything but a conspiracy theory to be wondering if the Russians hacked the RNC and have kept what they found there to make sure Trump and the Republicans obeyed. The President of the United States, who at this rate will be the last freely elected President of the United States, made in his measured way a small gesture last Friday that perhaps opened the door to these horrifying revelations of a coup by an outside power nearly complete. He asked for a full review, but we do not have time for a full review. Barack Obama has twice stood in front of America, in front of the world, in front of history, and said, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Today is the time for him to do so. He must immediately declassify and release all relevant materials held by the FBI, the CIA, DHS, and the other intelligence and security services, and in the White House, and anywhere else in government. And the Attorney General must immediately appoint a special prosecutor to investigate what Donald Trump knew, and when he knew it, and what, if any, collusive links exist now or existed earlier between the Russian Federation and the Republican National Committee. If Trump does grab power, he can try to dismiss that special prosecutor, but he will at least have to get the courts to sanction him. And most immediately, the intelligence briefing proposed today for the Electoral College, what the CIA and the others know, when they knew it, how much the Trump campaign knew, that must be conducted without delay and without redactions. There are no arguments of security or face-saving or intelligence secrecy or national interest that carry any weight now. How much worse can it get by telling America the unvarnished, unprocessed, unredacted truth about this coup? We are already on the precipice of losing the freedom and independence of the nation. He must tell us so that we may defend ourselves. He must tell the electors of the Electoral College so that, microscopic as the chance may be, they could still prevent this cataclysm. There is no time for a full review or a measured analysis or recommendations to prevent interference in our future elections, because permitting Donald Trump to assume the office of president reduces the chance that we will have any future elections. The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum who are beholden to scum, Russian scum. As things are today, January 20th will not be an inauguration, but rather the end of the United States as an independent country. It will not be a peaceful change of power. It will be a usurpation, and the usurper has no validity, no credibility, and no authority under the Constitution. This is a reality that will become the only reality until this country rids itself of Donald John Trump. He is not a president. He is a puppet put in power by Vladimir Putin. And those who ignore these elemental existential facts, Democrats or Republicans, are traitors to this country and will immediately and forever after be held accountable. Resist. Peace.
Sometimes what I say I think is pretty darn interesting and informative. Sometimes it's a train wreck, but it's real.
I'm simply laying out the facts that I'm the real deal, and everybody who's a thinker knows it.
If I'm one thing, you can say Alex Jones is genuine, and everybody who is noble knows my track record and that I'm noble. And by noble, I'm not perfect, but I mean what I say. I'm the real deal, and everybody knows it.
Alex Jones and others were responsible because they're spreading fake news, a story about Comet Ping Pong. I hold Alex Jones responsible for putting my children in danger.
Your reputation's amazing. I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed, I hope. And I think we'll be speaking a lot, but you'll be looking at me in a year or 2 years. Let's give me a little bit of a time to run things. But a year into office, you'll be saying, wow.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Trump's banana Republicans have proposed that White House press briefings be moved out of the presidential mansion and held next door at the executive office building, and why should you care for one damned minute? Rance Priebus says it's a great thing because the result would be, quote, about quadrupling the amount of reporters that can cover the White House. And certainly that sounds like a wonderful intensification of the bright, shining light of a democratic free press on the operation of the commander-in-chief and his noble staff. The more, the better, right? Just the way it works in Russia. A giant crowd of reporters screaming for the leader's attention, making signs indicating what organization they belong to, and even signs and props indicating what questions they intend to ask. Some of them showing exactly the kind of objectivity and respectful skepticism a free press is supposed to bring to the coverage of government at its highest levels. And yes, she's a self-described journalist at a Putin news conference, holding a picture of Putin ripping off his shirt to indicate he's actually Superman. We are just a few steps removed from the contestants trying to get MC Monty Hall's attention during a taping of the old game show Let's Make a Deal. Though I would never want to insult anybody in a comparison among Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump, and Monty Hall. I have respect for Monty Hall. Look, I don't know the last time anything at a White House news conference or anything done by a White House correspondent actually contributed anything measurable to the coverage of a president. Not since Sam Donaldson used to make news by bellowing questions at Ronald Reagan and Reagan condemning himself by refusing to answer them. I also think that if traditional journalism contributes in any way to the prevention of dictatorship here now, it will be by the grunt work, fact-checking the White House news conferences, and revealing legislation and departmental orders, and checking legalities, and confronting an administration's lies with facts. The next Woodward and Bernstein will get there not at the news conferences, but by skill at filing Freedom of Information Act requests. But the idea of quadrupling the amount of reporters that can cover the White House is a Trojan horse with a lot of Trojans in it. Firstly, there is the Putin-like spectacle. The bigger the room, the more room for staffers and hangers-on, and for want of a better term, Trump plants. Trump gave this stunt away at last week's news conference. He packed the place with people applauding for him, and they have as much right to be at a presidential news conference as would people booing him. And that amount of people is none. Quadrupling the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you have suddenly created another stop on the Trump perpetual campaign rally tour. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you suddenly make it easier to ignore the reporters with actual questions, as opposed to the ones carrying signs showing Trump wearing a Superman shirt. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you suddenly change from difficult to impossible any coordinated action to prevent Trump repeating the other stunt he used in New York last week, singling out and attacking one reporter the way the bully picks out one kid from the crowd to beat up while the others say, "Thank goodness it wasn't me," and they continue to participate in the farce. The press corps should have walked out then and there, but all that would have happened then would have been more questions from Trump staffers. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you lose any sense of who is asking the questions and what their motivations are. You may abhor Fox News, as Fox News viewers abhor me. You don't have any doubts as to why we are asking what we are asking, either of us. And you don't have any doubts about whether or not we have been planted there. It is, in retrospect, so absurd as to be almost unbelievable and almost forgotten. His name was Jeff Gannon, or so he said, and he represented something called Talon News, and in early 2003, the Bush White House press office began issuing him day passes to its news conferences. But then on January 26, 2005, President Bush held his own news conference, and there was Gannon of Talon News asking him about Senate Democratic leaders, quote, "How are you going to work with people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality?" Within 2 weeks, the whole stunt collapsed. Jeff Gannon was actually James Guckert, and the closest thing he had come to journalism before he began asking friendly questions at the White House was having his naked pictures appear on a series of gay escort websites. Gannon stopped writing for his site. The White House never gave him another press credential. His Talon News organization was tracked back to the owner of the website GOP USA, and then the Talon site was shuttered. It was also later revealed, but never convincingly explained, how Gannon slash Guckert had learned of an internal government memo about the outing of the CIA operative Valerie Plame. And just as all this was playing out, federal records were revealed showing the Bush administration had paid a man named Armstrong Williams $240,000. Williams had a syndicated newspaper column, and in exchange for that money, he was supposed to write positive articles about Bush's No Child Left Behind program, and to try to convince other African-American journalists to do the same. The Bush administration's attempt at media manipulation, including literally buying good coverage, was amateurish compared to what we can expect from Trump and his White House chief strategist, the former campaign boss and head of the Breitbart propaganda site, Steve Bannon. Why was it that the Guckert, Gannon, and Williams scams didn't work? They didn't work because they were too easy to spot in a crowd. Solution? Make the crowd bigger. Move the White House press briefings next door, and as Reince Priebus says, you can quadruple the amount of reporters that can cover the White House. So what if you don't know if they're being paid to ask softball questions, or to cheer, or just to serve as more useful idiots at a Trump rally? It's only the end of the First Amendment. Oh, and by the way, the guy the Bushies paid for the positive newspaper columns, Armstrong Williams, he's still around. He works with a Dr. Ben Carson. And when that nominee for Secretary of Housing endorsed Trump in March 2016, the endorsement was confirmed by Armstrong Williams. Resist. Peace.
So, pretty excited. We've been following the custody trial of right-wing radio host and hernia who wished he was a real boy, Alex Jones. In court, Jones's ex-wife has claimed that Alex is unhinged, and she's backed up that claim with clips like this.
I smell you.
We here at the show, pretty excited, we've been following the custody trial of right-wing radio host and hernia who wished he was a real boy, Alex Jones. In court, Jones's ex-wife has claimed that Alex is unhinged, and she's backed up that claim with clips like this.
I can smell you from 1,000 miles away, and you smell like failure. You smell like hell. And I want to thank the God of the universe that I'm not with these people. I get tears in my eyes to God, but I'm thankful every day that I don't come from filth like you that want to trample on humanity. Thank God I'm not a degenerate, filthy vampire like you.
Adding, happy Valentine's Day, honey.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Now, here's the deal. Alex Jones's lawyers have insisted that his on-mic persona is just a character that evidently he's been playing since he was a teenager.
When I was 16, I didn't want to party anymore. I didn't want to play games anymore. I grew up. I'd already been in the fights, all the big rituals. I'd already had probably, I hate to brag, I'm not bragging, it's actually shameful, probably 150 women or more. That's conservative. I'd had over 150 women. I'd already been in fights with full-grown men. I was already dating college girls by the time I was 15 years old. I was already a man.
Yep. Yep. Fight and have sex. That's what men do. One thing we evidently don't do, take our mood stabilizers. Unfortunately, Alex Jones's brand of fact-free truth-telling has been making him some enemies, like the powerful cabal known as Chobani Yogurts, who is now suing Jones for claiming that their Twin Falls, Idaho yogurt plant has been spreading crime and tuberculosis. To be fair, crime and tuberculosis is one of Chobani's least favorite flavors. Still better than pomegranate. Now, this might shock you, but Alex Jones is furious, and he has a message for Chobani.
Guess what? You just ran into a Texan. So you get ready, because we're never backing down, and our audience isn't backing down.
All right, take note, Alex Jones listeners. He just volunteered for you to fistfight a yogurt factory. All right? Now, I understand what Alex Jones is going through personally. Because for years, I'm not telling anything you guys don't know, I've also been playing a right-wing radio host, my beloved character, Tuck Buckford. And Tuck has dealt with a lot of the same stuff.
Don't do it. You can only trust 1 out of 5 dentists, okay? The one who hates gum is the only one who knows the truth, all right? But Brain Nation, old Tuck's not backing down. You know why? Because I'm more than a man's man. I'm a man's man! Okay? I'm man-cubed. I got tired of games by the time I was 13. All right? Woo! All right, when I was 13, I'd already had kissing time with 22,000 ladies, all right? That's with tongue. And I made love to a woman of every height, not metric. That's how you get a venereal disease, all right? Stick to the imperial scale. And then all the women love me because I knew how to draw Snoopy, all right? All right, a nose there. And a vampire Snoopy controlled by George Soros drinking the blood of Charlie Brown, okay? Which is why they may try. I feel sorry for them. I'm not going to roll over for Big Yogurt, the Aluma Chobani working to undermine the liberty of the American manscape. That's why I stick to Patriot brands like Yoplait and Stonyfield Yo Kid Squeezers, not that Activia stuff. They're out forcing Jamie Lee Curtis to poop. She doesn't want to do that. Pooping is a choice. She's a woman, and I know woman because I remind you, I slept with every woman named Deborah in the Western Hemisphere. George Soros doesn't want you to know the real value of yogurt, okay? That it's a natural protein-rich gamma ray shield to keep the Clinton Foundation from reading your dreams, okay? You take this yogurt. It can be plain, it can be vanilla, it cannot be fruit flavored, all right? Why is the fruit on the bottom? What is it hiding? Why is it down there? You take a plain yogurt, all right? You take this, you rub it right on your forehead, right there. Now they can't read your mind. You can't get in here, John Podesta, okay? You can't put yogurt on a pizza. My brain is a steel trap. I can't even tell what I'm thinking. Look, I have no idea why I'm doing this because I can't even read my own brain right now, all right? And the thing is, if you want to fulfill the vision of Founding Father Spuds McKenzie, not even death will prevent you from visiting mybrainfightstore.com, where you can buy nutrient-dense vitaceuticals and iodine suppositories, as well as several books that I have written in a fugue state. Because I am a man who takes PayPal, who has definitely had sex in a hot tub filled with yogurt, because the active cultures are a natural spermicide. They fight the sperm, all right? But my sperm wins. My sperm is a dragon of baby making. Brain Fight's brought to you by Squarespace. Not the web hosting company. It's a portable cube-shaped cage where I keep the alien who insists he's my neighbor. I'm not buying it. I haven't seen my neighbor for years. Oh, they're getting in. Oh, they're trying to get in. Don't let your guard down. They're trying to get in. Help me.
Stay strong, Tuck.
Made a game plan to keep me safe. He had assessed my case on the plane, and he said that while he did not... I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. The President of the United States reportedly insists on being brought to Buckingham Palace alongside the Queen of England in a golden coach drawn by six royal white horses. Like goddamned Cinderella. Like a man unaware of the security nightmare he will create. Like a man unaware of the massive public protest that all the king's, or in this case, all the queen's men and all the queen's horses might be able to keep nonviolent, might be able to contain, but cannot keep from happening. When the Times of London reported this latest evidence of the nexus of narcissism and madness meeting inside the addled brain of the demented man a minority of our voters have cursed us with, it caused barely a ripple here because it was only the 15th or 16th craziest thing Trump had done that week. Reminder, the newspaper reporting this, quoting security sources and making references to London's Metropolitan Police and the U.S. Secret Service, is owned by Trump's newest hanger-on, Rupert Murdoch. This is not a story designed to harsh Trump's buzz. This is reality, so real that even Murdoch gets it. The Times reported that, quote, the White House has made it clear it regards the carriage procession down the Mall as an essential element of the itinerary for the visit currently planned for the second week of October. The story, co-written by the paper's crime and security editor, dripped with warnings. As recently as 2003, Vladimir Putin's state visit saw that foreign leader and the Queen ride the 0.7 mile with the carriage top down. But 6 years ago, President Obama had the presence of mind to thank the British for the option of the ceremony, but to ride in his own armored limousine. Even when the President of Mexico and the Chinese President visited separately in 2015, each had the common sense to ride in a closed carriage. It is not clear that Trump has even agreed to that. If he is in a golden coach being dragged up the Mall by a couple of horses, the risk factor is dramatically increased, the Times quoted its primary security source as saying. There may well be protections in that coach, such as bulletproof glass, but they are limited. In particular, it is very flimsy. It would not be able to put up much resistance in the face of a rocket-propelled grenade or high-powered ammunition. Armor-piercing rounds would make a very bad show of things. But we're not even talking about those serious scenarios. This is a president who would not go to throw out the ceremonial first pitch at the Washington Nationals opening day baseball game, obviously out of fear that he would be booed. This is a president who has yet to appear anywhere in public in which he might not loudly be cheered. This is a president who collapses into paranoid accusations of paid agitators when protesters demanding that he release his tax returns force him to alter his motorcade route from his fantasy land of a golf course he owns but can charge the taxpayers each time he uses it to his other fantasy land of a country club he owns but can charge the taxpayers each time he uses it. This is the world's ultimate snowflake, living inside the world's ultimate snow globe of his own creation, to prevent the slightest chance that his delusion that he is universally beloved will ever come into violent contact with the reality that he is hated, allegedly insisting that he ride to the palace in a golden coach, moving so slowly that he would have to hear and see at least some of those who despise him for as long as 10 minutes. 20 years ago, I had a stalker, and while I worked, ironically then, for Rupert Murdoch, the woman appeared to be getting crazier and crazier. Now, for everything else they do wrong, Fox does protect its employees from stuff like this. Murdoch himself gets about one serious death threat per day, his head of security, a former Scotland Yard chief, told me, after he had flown from London to Los Angeles to coordinate a game plan to keep me safe. He had assessed my case on the plane, and he said that while he did not suspect that the woman was going to turn to violence, he wanted to enact several protective measures because her behavior reminded him of the story of a prominent actor who was being unknowingly stalked by a woman fan. This woman's delusion about the actor was different than most of them. She didn't need to actually inject herself into his life. She was content to simply mirror his life. If he spent the weekend in, say, Miami, she would weasel the information about where he was staying and what he was doing, something at which stalkers were far too adept, and she would go to Miami herself. She would stay at a hotel near his hotel. She would follow him at a discreet distance. Never once would she interact with him, but on Monday morning, she could go home and go to work and say of, let's call him Mike, Mike and I were in Miami. We went to South Beach. We even saw that funny game you bet on, Hi-Li. When all this was over, her coworkers were absolutely astonished. Everything she had told them about Mike was factually correct and rich in detail. They never realized it was only literally correct. Mike had indeed gone to Miami and South Beach and Hi-Li, and this woman, his stalker, had gone to Miami and South Beach and Hi-Li, and the parts she left out were... she had stayed 100 yards away from him at all times, and he never knew she existed. The stalking ended, Murdoch's head of security told me, in Minneapolis or somewhere, when Mike left his hotel on foot, and his stalker followed at a safe distance, and then suddenly, Mike realized he had left something at his hotel, and he turned around to go get it. And the stalker was faced with disaster. Mike was now approaching her. She couldn't run away. That would be admitting to herself that Mike wasn't actually her boyfriend. She couldn't cross to the other side of the street. She couldn't stop to introduce herself. She certainly couldn't let him walk past her without as much as looking at her. The entire elaborate self-delusional fantasy was about to crash down upon her unless... Murdoch's man said that as soon as Mike got to within a few feet of her, this woman, who he had never met and who had never contacted him, but who had built a complicated and intricate and expensive relationship with him, saved herself from the confrontation with reality, the end of her world, in the only way left to her. She reared back and punched Mike in the face. She could now smile and explain to the police, to her co-workers, to herself, that she and Mike... had had a fight, and they had broken up. In our little nightmare, of course, Donald Trump is Mike's stalker, and Mike is the reality in which Trump the stalker is failing and old and paunchy and fooling 1,000 fewer people right now than he fooled an hour ago, a reality in which the world mocks him and the politicians use him and his judgments are entirely wrong and those closest to him try to calculate the exact date it becomes to their advantage to sell him out over Russia and impeach and jail him. And mostly Mike is the public that hates Trump the stalker. The public that Trump the stalker has decided to expose himself to. From a slow-moving golden carriage on the way to Buckingham Palace in October. What happens when reality approaches Trump and he cannot avert that confrontation? What kind of punch to the face does a thwarted stalker throw when he has nuclear weapons? Resist. Peace.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The Gripes of Rat.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, ready.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
Welcome to Upper Geek. Good evening,
guys. Hey, Geek. How are you, man?
JuicedTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne-Marie from Up All Night on 4Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne-Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
The bed.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening and joining us on Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, the fine wine of select gripes. Join us every Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time at 148.ca/1 and 24/7 at the Too Cool for School website, juicedtalk.com. This is Tom Savino saying, resist. I may be joking, but I'm never kidding.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.